So I am Del Halkey. I for the Smithsonian out here, affiliated with Montana State University. Sometimes a little new to the area. I thought I'd give you a little bit of background about myself. I'm originally from Kansas. I've also worked in Oklahoma and in Germany. I've been here since the very beginning of 2022, and really been fun to get to know some of you, and hopefully stick around for quite a while. And yeah, I'll tell you a little bit about my knowledge about grasshoppers. So grasshoppers, you know, people have really strong feelings, of course, and if they pest or keystone ecological taxa in grasslands, I think they're both of these things, and it's a mix, and it's not a completely black and white story. So they can, of course, eat a ton of our biomass that we also want out there for the and that leads to their pest side of the equation. Not all species are considered these pest species. So we have over 100 species of grasshopper in Montana. Gary will definitely be talking about this quite a bit more, but around 12 or so are considered pest species. All the ones we do have here are native, so we don't have invasive species coming in. And they do play some key roles in the ecosystem. They've been on Earth for quite a while. We actually, there were grasshoppers around at the same time as the dinosaurs. Although there weren't that many taxa back then. They really started to get in their zone with the rise of grasslands. This is about 60 million years ago, diversified. They've been part of the system ever since. And of course, just like we're losing grassland birds, when we lose our grasslands, we also species of grasshoppers out there. So they're also affected by these changes. So what's a grasshopper? I think, yeah, Gary will also cover this a bit. Today I'm going to be talking about this short-horned grasshopper. So I think of them as like the hard, crunchier grasshopper. There's some examples here. We have these are actually three different subfamilies of grasshopper. These are called slant-faced spur throats. If you flip them over and look at their neck, they actually have a little spur right here. And these are called banded wings. So these are the ones that sometimes you see them fly up and they look kind of like a butterfly. They'll have yellow. Sometimes it's just all black grass wings. And then, you know, we have some side partners here that are also in this broader border with doctor. The short-horned grasshoppers are in as well. This includes things like our crickets and katydids. I think of them as like the squishier things. We don't really have as much crickets and katydids in this region as we do in more tall grass prairie. They like a little bit moister conditions, but you know, of course, we're seeing them around. There is an invasive cricket that you see in your house sometimes that'll be hopping around. But within these short-horned grasshoppers, we don't actually have any non-native taxa in Montana, as far as I know. Here's just a few of the grasshoppers that you can see in Montana. So we have this Carolina grasshopper. I'm sure everyone that's been around has seen this one. A lot of times they're here in Malta in town. You see them, they're pretty big. They're these banded wings. This one has all this black on the wing that's pretty characteristic. This is one of our species, the migratory grasshopper. These ones are also in very high numbers. See them out in the prairie all the time. These are a little bit of a meatier species, these two-striped grasshoppers. A lot of times I see them on the side of the road. They're eating some sunflowers. They're always sitting on the stalks, and they're pretty characteristic. This isn't the best picture of one, but they have these two big stripes down their back. Here's some kind of weirder grasshoppers just for some fun. This is the Plains Lover. It's a really massive grasshopper, not just in length, but in the width. It kind of looks like a toad. I haven't seen them up here north of the Missouri, but I have seen them south of Missouri. And yeah, they're possible. They could be here. I just haven't gotten the chance to see one potentially. Let me know if you're interested if anyone spotted them up here. This is the painted grasshopper, just kind of a cool looking grasshopper in this. Also, strange grasshopper, this kind of wheel on its back that's called the green pool. So those can be around here. A lot of times they're more, also both of those two species are more common south of the river, but they could be here as well. What about locusts? So I always get this question, what are we having? They come in this clade locust. So locusts, in the east at least, a lot of people also call cicadas locusts. So I'm just going to say that's not a locust, that's a cicada. But locust is a kind of grasshopper. There are taxa that occur in parts of the world. So there's, you know, maybe you heard in 2021, I believe, there was a very big amount of clade locusts in East Africa and the Middle East. They also occur in Mongolia, China, and in Australia. And what's interesting about them is when they go into adult phase, based on environmental cues, they can either become a solitary grasshopper that just acts kind of like a regular grasshopper, or they actually morph into this what's called gregarious or swarming type of grasshopper. They actually look different. They have different coloration. Scientists didn't even know they were the same species originally. So it took a while to figure that out. So just based on the cues, that a lot of times they're going to disperse further when they morph into that swarming phase. And they will get in these like crazy amounts of grasshoppers. This is a picture a few years ago. So just incredible. It's even more than we get to see around here. And we don't have these clade locusts. But we did previously have a taxa called the Rocky Mountain locusts. So potentially you're familiar, maybe you have stories in your family of this grasshopper. There was just huge swarms of them, or if you've read like Little House on the Prairie, this is one of the species that they were discussing. Here's kind of a range map of some of the areas that they occur in, quite large ranging. However, they are now extinct as far as we know. The last living specimens were collected in 1902. The career of a famous entomologist was formed by this taxa, and he was a really keystone person who helped form the USDA. So it's part of the history of the USDA. We don't really know why they went extinct. There's different hypotheses that have been put forward. One of them is a lot of habitat change at that period of time, or this bottleneck hypothesis. So that just means their populations went up and down so quickly that maybe when they went down, they just crashed and happened to go extinct. And we don't really know if they've changed the system by being gone, but it is possible that this was, and when they would swarm and they would put quite a few nutrients back into the soil, it could have changed our habitats. Some people have hypothesized that this is what caused the Eskimo curlew to go extinct. They went extinct right after this taxa was lost, so it's potentially a contributor. So they might have changed the system by being gone. Are grasshopper abundances cyclic? This is another question I often get. The answer is they can be. We might be seeing cyclic populations in this region as well. This is a study that I conducted in a Kansas tall grass prairie, and we used this analysis that's actually used to detect sound waves, and we picked up a 5-year cycle. Mm-hmm. So this tall grass system has this 5-year up and down cycle of grasshoppers. Gary will definitely show you some more data today about changes in grasshopper infestations across Montana, but it's possible that there's a longer cycle in Montana just based on some of those range maps. Here we're just showing, this is kind of a scientific problem we have of understanding insect taxa over time. So this gray line represents a theoretical cycle of the abundances of grasshoppers. And then when we're trying to figure out how their populations are changing, what we do is we always like run this linear trend across a time series. And if we have this cycle, we might not really be able to understand that trend because these cycles are so large that we just pick up the top or the bottom of these cycles rather than getting that real trend. So this is a problem that we really need very good data and understand changes in populations when we have these big cycles. And also just affects how we understand the population. So, you know, we see a crazy high year, crazy low year, we feel like, oh, all the grasshoppers are gone. Oh, there's so many grasshoppers, but it's really hard to get a feel for this longer change without a lot of data. So why are they cyclic? Honestly, we don't, but there, so some ideas that people have, you know, there's other populations of animals that show these predator and prey cycles where they bounce up and down due to predation. Potentially could be that. There's been much data to show that that's the case. It's possible. They also could be affected by climatic cycles. So this is things like the El Nino oscillation, Pacific Potato oscillation, or the land oscillation. So these are kind of swings into things like droughtier times or warmer times. And there have been several papers that have correlated these big climate cycles with changes in grasshopper populations. What weathers do grasshoppers like? This is also a common question I get. These are definitely some things that they like. They like to have a warm winter that doesn't have a lot of really, really hard freezes when there's no snow on the ground, because that's a condition that will kill some grasshopper eggs. And a lot of times they also like a drier spring or early summer. There are some fungal pathogens that will attack grasshoppers if it's a wetter spring. And that's not, they don't like that, of course. And sometimes actually that will change plants. Having a drier spring will change plants in a way that grasshoppers prefer. And there's a few different ideas about why that might be. Some people think just plants being a little bit stressed by being water limited is something grasshoppers like. Other people think that it's has to do with the nutrient amount in the grass, that if the plants has some amount of water where it can still get nutrients from the soil, but not a ton of water where it grows really, really big and is just full of structural carbons, then it's actually a little bit more nutrient rich, and that's good for grasshoppers. So grasshoppers and these larger grazers, is it a competition or a mutualism? A lot of times we think of it from the cow's perspective and it's a competition for forage, but from a grasshopper's perspective, I have some data here from last year that shows the grasshoppers actually like hanging out in the cow area. So this is number of grasshoppers in cow area compared to ungrazed. They're actually much higher where you have cattle than where you don't. So that's probably a nutrient perspective where the cattle are also helping cycle nutrients in the system and the grasshopper like having that higher nutrients grasslands, and are actually more abundant where you have the cattle. And this is kind of a common theme in grasshopper biology, that it's not just about how much grass is out there for a grasshopper. It's about the quality of the food, and grasshoppers will be more attracted to areas that have higher quality plant food. So what do grasshoppers do? This is probably the biggest one. They can be nutrient cyclers. Of course, they're eating plants and we lose plants, but there's a little bit. So if you imagine that there's a plant out there, nothing eats it, it just dies and the leaves fall off to the ground, and eventually they're going to break down and bacteria are going to recycle them. It's going to go back into the soil. There are going to be nutrients that are available for next year. That's called the brown food web. So that's like a slow process that the nutrients will be cycled back into the system, but it takes quite a bit of time. So if you alternatively imagine an herbivore comes in and eats that, it could be a cow, it could also be a grasshopper. The herbivore eats the plant, they poop it up. That poop is a little fertilizer pellet that goes back into the soil and is recycled into the plant at a much faster rate most of the time than when a plant just dies. So it can actually lead to this faster cycling of nutrients. And you know, grasshopper poop has a lot of nitrogen. It can also, just having the poop on the litter can allow plants to decompose quicker as well. And there have actually been some studies that show that, so if you have grasshoppers, and this is not at any kind of the rates we've seen here in the past couple of years, but at lower levels, you have grasshoppers versus not having grasshoppers, through this nutrient cycling process, we can actually increase forage production in some situations. And this occurs, like I said, not really, there's like extreme drought reaching this level of competition for forage, but in the more moderate. And it also depending on which grasshopper species you have. and the grasshopper species that eat, just go in and eat up all the really high quality plants are not going to cause this effect. So if you have those, you know, certain grasshoppers just go in and eat all the alfalfa, remove all the high quality plants, that's not going to increase forage production. But there's some species that actually prefer the low quality plants, and that leads to this increase in nutrient cycling, potentially even fertilization of the forage for next year. This is some data I took from last year, and this is, you know, this is not at all saying anything about the spring program. This is like a very high level of insecticide for 10 years straight, so really critical of our grasshopper system. And what we found is comparing the sites that have had large extirpation of insects and comparing those with grasshoppers. We do actually see really reduced levels of soil carbon and nitrogen when we remove grasshoppers. So actually get about a double in soil carbon and soil nitrogen with grasshopper addition. So they can improve some soil health quality. And then of course, what Kelsey was talking about, they're kind of our, you know, you can find them, they're a great snack. There's a large variety of the animals that eat them. Of course, grassland birds, also our toads and reptiles, insects. This is actually a parasitic fly that's also a pollinator that specializes in grasshoppers that's in the system as well. And so why do so many things eat them? Of course, they're everywhere. So that's a good reason. They also have quite a high amount of food protein. Depending on bird taxa, they can be a pretty big proportion of the diet. Also mentioned a few of these already, sagegrass chicks, some of these grassland obligate species, kestrel, swings and top. And yes, she also said there's gaussian variation in how much birds can control grasshopper populations. I have a study in North Dakota that I would also know 30% to 50%, but yeah, it depends on types of birds you have as well. It is possible that birds eat up all the big ones and the little ones go wild and there's more of them too. So it depends on the system. Some other things that this can do, third taxa will eat molted plants. This is these two on the top, the thistle grasshopper and stinky grasshopper have been developed as biocontrol for these two plants, thistle and room snakeweed. This is not a grasshopper that's been developed as a biocontrol, the big-headed grasshopper, but it is a grasshopper that will prefer cheatgrass and roasted wheatgrass, so that's nice of it. Here. Oh, the conclusion? So the population is changing. Basically, we don't know, but it's just some random data together on this. These are the only groups that we actually have status reports on in Europe. And so we know that a quarter of the Lepidoptera species are threatened. Of course, Europe is a very different system. Pasture land has been greatly modified to here. Of course, we have seen some of the worsening plague locusts in recent years, and there are certain reasons why that is as well. I can tell you more about that later if you're interested. Here's a few studies from grasslands in the US. In Tallgrass, Kansas, grasshoppers have been declining in the past 20 years. In Colorado, we have also seen some species increasing. This is the only long term study I could find from Montana. It's from the National Bison Range, so it's unfortunately Western Montana. They do not have a trend at all, so grasshoppers seem pretty stable. However, they do see this reduction in the day to 50% mortality. So that's from the peak amount of grasshoppers in the summer down to when they're 50% of that. How quick is that going? It's been reducing over time. So this suggests that there's a more rapid flash peak over time than the grasshoppers are reducing versus a broad panel. The grasshopper abundance is like this over the season, and the grasshopper abundance is switching to these more abrupt shifts over time. So in conclusion, grasshoppers, good or bad, I think they're both. There's a few different ways that they affect grasslands, depending on the year and conditions, can be good for grassland health or bad. They can be extremely cyclic, so we can see these huge abundances, and then that also means we have some years with very low grasses. Drought years where there's not much forage, they definitely can compete with cattle, especially when we're not in these forage competition years, they can really be key for nutrient cycling, and they can feed other things. And of course, with grassland loss, we also reduce grasshopper diversity. So potentially we could lose some of those species that then help compete against our best species. And, but again, lots of this data is just from some little local population, and we don't have nearly as much information about vertebrates as we have vertebrates. So there's still a lot to be learned. So thanks. And this is some of my field team working on catching bugs and even sorting dead grasshoppers.
This was.
Yeah.